Okay, so as I said, on Friday, Rabbi Rafi Eis very nicely lent me his Created Equal by Rabbi Dr. Josh Merman. I will arrange his shiur here this year. We had it scheduled last year, then COVID. It was chaos. He was like, it was scheduled. So he has this wonderful book, Created Equal. He has a lot really on Parshat Shemot, but there's one thing I wanted to focus on, and that is, he makes basically argument throughout the book that the Torah in many ways is responding to the ancient Near East in terms of law, in terms of economics, in terms of politics, and even in terms of the way they tell stories, in terms of narrative, all aiming towards a more equal, egalitarian ethos. Right? That's basically the running theme of the book. But one of the fascinating things that he picks up is from the story of Moshe's birth, specifically the comparison of Moshe's birth to the birth story of Sargon. So do you know Sargon? We've talked about it a little bit. There are multiple Sargons, right? But Sargon is the, there are multiple, right? There's Sargon the first, Sargon the second, but this is the great Sargon of Akkad, right? He was the ruler of Babylonia for over 50 years in the 24th century BCE, okay? And he has the following story in his narrative about himself. I'll read it to you, tell me if it sounds familiar. I am Sargon, the great king, king of Akkad. My mother was a high priestess. I did not know my father. My father's brother dwells in the upland. My city is Zorpiranu. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Okay. Which lies on Euphrates bank. My mother, the high priestess, conceived me. She bore me in secret. She placed me in a reed basket. She sealed my hatch with pitch. She left me to the river, where I could not come up. The river carried me off. It brought me to Aki, drawer of water. Aki, drawer of water, brought me up as he dipped his bucket. Aki, drawer of water, brought me up as his adopted son. Aki, drawer of water, set me to his orchard work. During my orchard work, Ishtar loved me, the goddess. 55 years I ruled as king. I became lord over and ruled the black-headed folk. I'm not even going to defend the political correctness of a text written 4,500 years ago, whatever it is, okay? It's not happening, okay? I hard mountains with picks of copper. I was wont to ascend high mountains, the land and the sea I sieged three times. I conquered Dilmun. I went up the Great Dare. I destroyed Kazalu, etc., etc., etc. Okay? Now, this story should sound familiar to Moshe's birth story. Here's a few. One, Sargon's mother is a priestess. Moshe's mother, maybe not a Kohen, but from the tribe of the priests, from Levi. Both the mothers have to give birth in secret. Both stories, the father is downplayed. They don't have names, and they're mentioned for about a second, right? But they're not important in this story. The child's mother places them in a basket lined with pitch, adopted by strangers, and come under female guardianship. Either Bat Paro or Ishtar, the goddess, and both are drawn from the water, and in the case of Moshe, that's literally what his name means, Min Hamayim Mishitihu, as opposed to here, where that's not his name, except three times, Aki, drawer of water, brought me up as he dipped his basket, Aki, drawer of water, etc., etc. So the stories are pretty similar in many ways. Now, some scholars have said, well, they're not identical, so let's just ignore the similarities. Like, you know, Sargon's mother seems to have had some sort of illicit relationship. That's why she gave birth in secret, as opposed to a legitimate parent. There's no indication that Sargon is being hunted, as opposed to Moshe is being hunted. But he says, as Dr. Berman says, the similarities seem too great to write off as mere coincidences. Now, he notes that this is not exactly the only stories in all of history that have this adopted hero motif, right? To give other examples, he says there's Oedipus in Greek mythology, Romulus, King Arthur, Snow White, Tarzan, Superman, Harry Potter, right? It's not like this is a motif that doesn't repeat itself, right? Right, so this is a, right, and they all have pretty similar elements. The infant was of noble birth. There's an explanation for abandonment, preparations for the infant's exposure, the act of exposure, protection or salvation in an unusual manner, discovery and adoption, and the listing of the accomplishments of the heroes, right? So you get that for Sargon, you get that for Moshe, you get that, right? Superman, fine, right? Krypton ends, his parents put him in a ship, he gets adopted in Smallville, right? We got it, right? And then he is Superman and movies are made about him, etc., 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 right? Harry Potter, right? Yes, Voldemort kills his parents, there was a prophecy before his birth, right? Right, etc. He's brought by on a flying motorcycle, you know, same, right? And then he defeats Voldemort over and over. We got it, okay? Right, this is a trope, it's not uncommon. So this, right, the similarities, and you get it, it comes up in Horus and Egypt, right? It happens a lot. Okay. But in what sense are they different, importantly? So here's what he argues. Like I said, the whole point of the whole book is to point out how the Torah is trying to, in many ways, respond to the world of the ancient Near East. What? What do you mean? The Rambam thinks that? Yes. Meaning it's not merely doing that, but it is, look, I'll put it differently. It may be conveying eternal truths, but it's saying them in a way that the people of the ancient Near East would have understood what it was trying to say, right? Meaning you can have things that are eternal truths, but the way that I'm going to highlight to you that I'm saying something unique is to say the world says X and we say Y, right? We might say Y even if the world said X, right? Meaning some of the things we say the world says, some of them they no longer say or they don't yet say or whatever, right? But if I want you to understand that I'm saying something unique, right, some of the way I'll do it is by highlighting differences. So here's what he notes. There's a lot, right? I mean, he writes a whole chapter on this. First of all, he notes, and I think this is important, by the way, in general, because it helps us understand this story. Yetziat Mitzrayim in general is, like, you know, an important story, as we know. Like, you know, we're chayav to talk about it all the time. A lot on Pesach. So what he says is important for the way we understand the story in general. Point one, he notes, is it should strike you that Sargon's is written in first person, and Moshe's is not. Right? The reason seems to be that what? What? Say it again. God's telling Moshe it would happen? What happened? Yeah, but what else does it accomplish? Yeah, exactly, right? Meaning Sargon is basically saying this to explain why he's divinely elected to rule, right? My mother put me in a river, and I was adopted by Ishtar, right? Like, I was taken in by Ishtar, the goddess Ishtar, right? So he tells the story from himself. But that's not what's going on in the Torah, right? The Torah tells it, right? Moshe is not an active player in this story. Instead, they're saying this is what happened, right? But it neutralizes it being it's obviously about Moshe, but Moshe isn't the hero of the story. He's the object of the story. But I'll point out, it's more than that. It's not even God. God, the narrator of the story, is the narrator. But it's not God, right? It's not like God explicitly talking. I mean, we might believe that God wrote the Torah, which we do, but God doesn't actually come out from behind the shadows that way. Meaning, you don't even get God saying, I did this because Moshe is a superhero. Right? You don't even get that. The story is just told as a story. Right? So, right, that's already very, right, important. Right? That it's not coming to say Moshe is godly chosen. It's saying that the story happened. It's divinely inspired, but not to make Moshe the hero that God chose. Right? He is, but that's not the point of the story. It's to highlight the way the story takes place in a way that's in God, in right, in plan with God. And you remember, right, everyone asks this question, why is the Haggadah never mentioned Moshe, right, barely mentions Moshe? Right? But that's the point, right? Like, Moshe's not, right, Moshe is an object in the story. Right? The story happens, and you're supposed to realize God is behind, but never is God can come out and say, yes, the way I did the story was by magically saving Moshe. Right? Like, he did, but you don't want to draw attention to Moshe in that sense. He's an object, he's a pawn in the story, an important one. That's first. And he says, right, therefore, right, even, but amazingly, as much as God's there, right, you get the opposite phenomenon, right, which is, one second, which is that God, right, part of it is that God doesn't pick Moshe, so it doesn't elevate Moshe that much, right? The second is that it also makes it clear that human beings are actually part of this story, right? Because Moshe isn't saved by Bat Paro because God told her to save it. He's saved by Bat Paro because Bat Paro did a good thing, right? So God is conspicuously in the background, but also conspicuously not overt. So it doesn't make it that Moshe is chosen by the gods, but it also, right, because he can't elevate himself, the gods, right? But it also makes it clear that human beings are, right, and their free will is important. So it's not important that Moshe, when he has no free will, be elevated by the gods. That would downplay free will and just make Moshe into a demigod. Instead, the other human players who are actually active and make moral choices, they're elevated. Right? And God's influence is clear, but it's in the background. It doesn't take away free will. Right? So, right, it's this complicated balance where human beings are respected for their free will, and God is part of the story, but he's not making people special. Yes, Gabi.
But almost if you're learning, he is
like, yes, but that's not I'm special. That's I am telling you what you're supposed to do. Dvarim is different, right? Meaning it's the narrative parts of the Torah story told in third person, right? Once you move to Dvarim, that's Moshe saying, I want you to keep the laws. It's very different, right? Recounting, but not telling you the first time. Yeah, I mean, he's telling it for to exhort them for different reasons. But again, that's a retelling, right? He retells the story from his perspective because he's giving them Musar. That's a very different thing than saying, I am Moshe the Great, right? No story about Moshe in that sense, right? Definitely not his greatness. His experience with them, that's different, right? Meaning if we talk about our experiences together, it's not me telling you, oh, I'm such an interesting person. It's remember when we, right? That's essentially what Moshe is doing in Dvarim. It's a very different phenomenon. But there's a lot, right? There's a lot others. He notes that it really highlights moral choices because the 9 months of Yocheved being pregnant, right, are passed over in a few words, right? Yocheved was pregnant and she gave birth to a son, right? One expression. On the other hand, when it comes to Bat Paro's moral action, in one pasuk it's described at five stages. Right? She opened the basket. She saw the boy. And behold, it was a baby. And she spared his life. And she said, from the children of the Hebrews. Right? Meaning it zeroes in on people's moral choices. Right? Really zeroes in on people's moral choices. As opposed to, right, Aki, who saved Sargon, who was just like, right? We don't really care, right? Meaning it's the hero is saved. Who cares who saved him? As opposed to here, the hero is the object, right? And the person we focus on is the daughter of the enemy, right, who's making a moral choice, and we focus on every stage. And also, she notes, he notes that basically in this whole story, the people who, right, who end up taking the moral high ground and making sure that things happen are the people in normal hierarchies shouldn't, right? Normally, the father is in charge, would save the baby. He doesn't. The mother is active. But very quickly, who is the mother replaced with? Yocheved? Miriam, right? Meaning, by the end of the day, Yocheved puts it, but then she turns away. She can't watch what's going to happen. Miriam is the one who actually saves, right? So this story, right, first of all, it doesn't make Moshe into a superhero yet, right? Second of all, it highlights, right, it doesn't make it that God, it was preordained by God. It was, but in the background, but it highlights that people have moral worth and make moral decisions. It upends hierarchies, because it's not the father, it's not the male who you would think would be the hero in the ancient world, right? It's, and it starts with the mother, but even then it's not the mother, it's the daughter, right? The mother saves it, but then Miriam is the one who watches him and makes sure that, and even there, right, she manipulates Bat Paro, right? Bat Paro is a heroine, but Miriam manipulates her into getting Yocheved to be the wet nurse, right? Meaning it is upending hierarchies. Right, I mean, he has a whole chapter on this. He also notes that it's not clear how much the amot are involved, the shvachot are there. So I'll just take with his summary because we're already going long. But he says, right, again, you want the full thing, you can read the chapter. But he says the account of the rescue of Moses, in contrast to the Sargon legend, demonstrates that the narrative portion of the Pentateuch may be construed as a polemic against the hagiography of royal inscriptions and royal theology. Earthly kings, the central figures in ancient Near East hierarchies, are a focus of the narratives of the Pentateuch too. However, the narratives that portray kings in the Pentateuch universally do so in such a way as to humble the king, bringing down from his pedestal. Kings can be defeated militarily either by God or God's servants. Kings could be made to sue for peace with the faithful. Kings could be converted, made to recognize God's dominion, right? Pharaoh. Kings could be humiliated before God or before his servants. The actions of Pharaoh's daughters represent an act of disobedience against monarchic rule, such as the midwives of Exodus 1 also performed. These stories are harbingers of a tradition in which prophets challenge royal authority, as in Moses' stand before Paro, Nathan's castigation of David, Elijah's censure of Ahab, and Yirmiyahu's called to disobey the order of King Sitiyahu. The account produces the most dominant figure of the entire Pentateuch. The man who will lead the children of Israel is a man whose own lineage and upbringing are beyond hierarchy. He comes from no one class. As much a royal as he is a slave, Moses leaves the palace to cast his lot with his slave kin and to found for them an order where all are equal citizens under the sovereignty of the King of Kings. Right now, he has a lot more here. But his point that, right, Moshe isn't chosen by God in that active way that would give him hubris, right, that the whole story upends hierarchies, that human choices, right, are highlighted, and everyone can make that choice, right? Whether it be, right, it's not about where you stand. Like, Bat Paro is a heroine, but she can still be undermined by Miriam, right? And then he goes on to the story. The fact that whatever it is about this whole upbringing that makes it that he goes out and he saves the Jews, right, from the Egyptian, right, clearly the fact that this story is breaking down hierarchies makes it that, yeah, someone brought up as a prince in the palace still cares about the slaves. And he thinks this is all a polemic against a world in which the kings are gods and are unquestioned or chosen by the god. Here it's very clearly not that. The hero is not, and he ends up being the one who challenges Paro and tells him there's a power beyond him, which in Egypt was crazy, right? Because the king was a god, right? And I think it's just important to realize the whole story, and again, we could spend a week just going through different aspects of the Sargon story, which he does. You can read the chapter. But I think it's important to recognize the extent to which the Torah really is trying to highlight the way human beings have free choice. It's undermining hierarchies. It's reminding us that we don't, right, that kings are not the top of the totem pole, that God is involved, that moral choices are heroic, right? And that needs to be the background for the entire story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is a showdown between Moshe, which represents that, and Paro, who would be much more Sargon-like, right? I am God, right? Moshe, who's the potential Sargon, is really the opposite of that, and he is the one who reminds the world that there's powers above the king. Okay, we went way too long.